What's up, everybody? It's the Locked On NHL podcast. Joe DiBiase from Locked On Sabres, joined as always by Tom Gazzola. Tom, we are we're now entering the NHL offseason. It's October 3rd. How excited are you for the next week?
Well, first of all, let's start with how bizarre this is to be saying, hey, we're going into the NHL's offseason in the first week of October. Yep. I mean, we would be starting the season this weekend, Joe.
As someone that has a team that or is covering a team that hasn't played since March, having to wait a couple of extra months is I don't want to, you know, even as someone covering the Sabres, who's like, you know, we could have used a little vacation from what they've had going on. But like, I'm ready. I want the puck to drop right now. But it just ended like 2 seconds ago.
I know it feels like ages ago, but it was only on Monday. And here's the other thing that, you know, even you just asking about the NHL's offseason, being ready about that and looking ahead to it, which is crazy in its own sense. And I know it's been a really crazy year and a crazy 7 months, but at some point, Joe, you're going to be back to work doing like a Sabres mini camp exhibition round series, because that's definitely still in the works. Those seven teams that did not take part in return to play, those guys need to play and do something and be active. And I don't know how you can make it anywhere near as equivalent to return to play as possible, but I think this mini camp / exhibition series that could occur, you know, I would assume it would be all the California teams doing their own thing and then all the teams out east doing their own thing. But at some point, that's got to be on the horizon and relatively quickly. I'm talking about like a month from now. Because I know we've been talking about a sliding schedule here, and Bettman came out and said that he expects things to start closer to January, maybe even early January. But you got to factor in a couple weeks of training camp, and you've got to factor in that the teams that did not return to play, Joe, are going to get a little bit of a boost and a head start by getting a mini camp underway of some sort. And that's got to, we're running out of time before the start of next season, and we're only 5-6 days into the off season. Oh, by the way, there's a draft coming up, and at the end of next week, free agency, and it's already going crazy. So buckle up, Oilers fans, buckle up, Sabres fans, buckle up, NHL fans. Like, this is going to be bonkers.
Yes, and I can't wait for free agency. I'm not just to, you know, see like what teams do, but I'm so interested in what the market actually looks like this offseason because of all the talk about internal salary caps and all of the high profile players that are going to hit the open market, some of which that we didn't think were going to hit the open market, like Alex Pietrangelo. So we'll talk more about them in a little bit here, but we got to put a bow on the 2019-2020 season. And the Stanley Cup final, to me, kind of got swallowed up for me personally, and I'm sure with a lot of more casual hockey fans. Not to say I am a more casual hockey fan, because I don't think I am at all. But when football starts, it's like that's where my attention is usually geared towards. Now, I did make it a point to watch these games between the Stars and the Lightning, so I don't know if I would say I was like pumped up for these games, but I still did watch them. I thought that the hockey at times was pretty good. I thought Tampa was clearly the better team through the whole course of the series. And I don't know, like, to me, it just felt like better team won. And I don't know how much there is to go on for that series, because Dallas, you know, like, I think they kind of tapped out.
Yeah, it really, and as someone who was at those games, I was impressed with the way Dallas came out of the gates, and you're right. They were not the better team. Tampa clearly was. We generally knew that going into the series, but some people, and myself included, were curious to see if the Stars would be able to continue to ride this roller coaster and maintain that high level of play and surprise everybody like they did throughout the first, second, and third rounds. And I thought, Joe, honestly, their best route to success was just by beating up the Lightning skilled smaller players, and they did that in game one, and that's how they got the win. But the Lightning are so deep and strong and able to adapt that they did, and they just took over the series. But I mean, I'm like you, and listen, I just have to walk down the street a few blocks to get to the arena from my place. Yep. And I had access to those games, and I was going to those games. But there was a Sunday, Joe, where I decided to watch the Arizona Cardinals game instead of going to an NHL playoff game. So you're not, and you want to talk about like hardcore hockey people versus, you know, the casual hockey people. Yeah. I'm right there with you in terms of the hardcore. And this thing was in my backyard and I was still like, I could go to the game today or I could watch football game. And I'm like, I will watch the football game. So I think that sentiment, you know, I think it carried through and reverberated with a ton of people, honestly.
Yep, same. And are we okay with Victor Hedman as the Conn Smythe? I feel like that's where my vote would have gone. I know there were some Braden Point votes among the voters. Nikita Kucherov, I think, got maybe one vote, and he led the team in points through the playoffs. Now, he did play more games than Point. But I would have gone for I would have been voting for Hedman, personally.
Hedman was phenomenal. And listen, all three of those guys could have been a great pick, and I think, you know, consensus – people would be like, hey, all right, you can't go wrong with either one of those. But Hedman was such a force so consistently, and he really dominated in this postseason. You could just tell when he was on the ice, that game was totally in control for the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think that's what kind of put him over the top for the Conn Smythe voting. So totally in agreeance with it. That Lightning team, I'm curious to see what happens next week with them. But just so many good pieces, so many good pieces on that team.
And how about, I mean, Tom, the story in the last couple of days on the Lightning after they've won the Stanley Cup, I mean, sharing the cup like with some fans and like having them drink out of the cup. And then like, it, you know, it's the Stanley Cup and those guys were being tested. I think in the moment, like there's no issue for me personally. And I don't think anybody with them like passing the cup around and kissing the Stanley Cup, you know, when they're in the bubble because they've been getting tested. But once you're in the, when you're in public, and by the way, you're in the state of Florida, which has had some very loose COVID restrictions through the entirety of this pandemic. Like that's not really the place where you want to be acting like this in the first place. And then that they did it in the way that they were doing it, just kind of carelessly. I don't know. That left a sore taste in my mouth.
And rightly so, Joe, because literally the day after they win the cup and leave the bubble, they land in Tampa. Ron DeSantis, whatever his name is, opens up the state of Florida, and it's no holds barred. Nothing's going on here. What global pandemic? And the Lightning are just basking in the glory of that. And it's so easy to get caught up in celebrations. But even the worst part to me was when Alex Killorn went on the microphone and was like, I'm so glad that Florida is open up so we can celebrate. I'm paraphrasing here, but I thought that was the epitome of everything that's not good about this situation. And the one bright spot, though, was Pat Maroon. I love that guy. He's absolutely phenomenal. What you see is what you get from him, and him just with that Grizzly Adams look, no shirt, being like, turn on the bright lights, turn on your flashlights. That's Pat Maroon on a Wednesday on an off day, just having a good time, man. He's just a beauty. But you're right, like, that's a bad scene. And I think the league probably sent the Lightning a note saying like, hey, maybe clean up your act, because we just spent $70 million to make sure none of you guys got COVID or were in contact with it. I'm sure there's been a few players. I know there's been a few players that have had COVID. I'm not sure how many Lightning players have had it, but like, come on. That's you get out of the bubble, and the next thing you do is you're spit and swap and letting everyone drink out of the Stanley Cup in the middle of a pandemic. Not the brightest decision.
No, not bright at all. But Alex Killorn, by the way, the guy that you just mentioned on the mic, like the guy that went to Harvard is the one that's saying that on the mic. Like, really? Yeah. I don't know. That was tough. But we move on. We get to free agency. We get to the NHL draft this upcoming week. Joe DiBiase, Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. I think we're probably, just from talking to you over the last year, I think we pretty much are in the same boat on this, that we're more excited for free agency than the draft, right?
Always. Honestly, always. I've covered so many drafts. I've been to them.
Yes.
And after like the first couple of picks, or whatever team you cover takes their first round pick, you're just like, okay, I want to go home. I've had enough.
Yeah. Having to fill time on doing like NHL draft shows or whatnot, having to fill time about guys you've never even heard of. Like, you're basically talking about the idea of what, like, your team drafting that position. You're not even talking about the player at that point.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, what are we doing? But like these drafts, these picks are important. We just don't really know what the results are going to be for such a long time. In most cases, that it's tough to get super excited for me, like right off the bat here. Like if you've got a top five pick, then that's different because those players are entering the league with more regularity right out of the gates than they used to. But if you don't have a top five pick, and then once you get into the second and third rounds, especially to me, I'm just like, I'm over it. But free agency, and maybe especially this free agency, is getting super interesting. Friday is when the UFAs will hit the open market. And let's start with the goaltender position, because I think that was the most interesting position, the most interesting market to me for what was going to happen this coming off season. A lot of good goalies that were scheduled to hit the market, a lot of guys, veterans, and ones that are maybe worthy of starting jobs that are that were either, you know, in bad situations where they were going to get traded for cap reasons, or like Henrik Lundqvist now enters this conversation because he just got bought out by the New York Rangers. The Penguins signed Tristan Jarry to a 3-year contract, which to me signifies what maybe some would have guessed, that Matt Murray is available. The Vegas Golden Knights take Robin Lehner off the free agent market with a 5-year, $25 million deal. So that would lead most to believe that Marc-Andre Fleury is now available to get moved. There's a report that Corey Crawford should hit the open market. Jacob Markstrom is scheduled to hit the open market. Holtby. So goalie right now, like a lot has happened, and I just threw a lot at you because there's been a ton of news. But it, what it seems to me is the free agent market got a little bit slimmer, mostly because Robin Lehner signed in Vegas, because to me he would have been the top guy. So you've got your veterans, you got your Lundqvist, you've got Marc-Andre Fleury, Corey Crawford. So if you are a team like maybe the Oilers, like the team you cover, who might be looking for an upgrade in net, like what are you picking out here and what are you chasing?
In all honesty, anybody in that like top grouping, like Marc-Andre Fleury would be phenomenal. He'd be a step up over Mike Smith and or Mikko Koskinen. Braden Holtby definitely would be. Crawford, maybe not so much. Craig Anderson, I don't know how much game he has left at 39. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see what happens with Markstrom here. It's going to be interesting in that regard. Thomas Greiss is an interesting name. I know the Oilers wouldn't go back to Cam Talbot. To me, the Oilers do have a need and a desire to improve their goaltending, but they're going to be fighting against a bunch of different teams. Like, can they weasel out a Darcy Kemper out of Arizona? Mm-hmm. Maybe. We know that Ken Holland made a courtesy call on that. Maybe he's had more discussions, but Ken Holland calls on everybody. It's really interesting. It just feels like a couple of chips are going to fall. We're going to have to see probably like the big ones like Markstrom. What's Markstrom going to do? Who's he going to go with? Is he going to stay in Vancouver? And I think that's going to dictate a lot of the market. Clearly, with Robin Lehner signing, Marc-Andre Fleury is available. I'm guessing Vegas will probably have to eat up some of his salary in any type of trade. It's just all these different moving parts, Joe, are going to have to, and then it's all these moving parts, and then whatever falls into place, it's going to be interesting to watch. Especially, we'll see if there's even some movement on Tuesday during the draft. Like maybe a couple of deals are made for goalies there. But, you know, when it comes to a team like the Oilers, they need to upgrade their goaltending because they have a 1B in Mikko Koskinen and a very expensive one at that at $4.5 million. But there's a bunch of teams now all of a sudden looking for number ones. And the Oilers don't have a ton of money to play with. So that could affect them in a lot of ways.
Yeah. One other guy, by the way, that I didn't mention running through all of those names, there was a report from Dan Kingersky from Sportsnet on Saturday that, and I have it right in front of me right now, it sounds like Bill Guerin, GM for the Minnesota Wild, is close to working the NHL trade market to get a first-round pick for his goalie, Devan Dubnyk. And when I read that, I was like mind blown. Like, he's going to get a first-round pick, right? Did I hear that right? He's not trading a first-round pick away to someone to take that salary? And I don't think Devan Dubnyk is as bad as his numbers were last season, because from his numbers, he was one of, if not the worst starting netminder in hockey. I don't even know if I can qualify him as starting netminder, by the way. He only played 30 games. And to think that San Jose, with all of these options that we just talked about, would spend a first-round pick on Devan Dubnyk, because to me, Tom, that seems insane.
At this point, it is, Joe. It really is. And if Bill Guerin can finagle that from Doug Wilson, then good on him, because that's pretty impressive. And the one thing to defend Dubnyk is, you know, his wife was going through some medical or personal issues, and he was away from the team for a bit. And he's very involved with his family, obviously. I think he's had some nagging injuries at times too. But if you think of his body of work over the last 5 years, Joe, he has multiple All-Star appearances. He is getting a little bit older, but he hasn't played a ton. So he should be able to be a decent complement to Martin Jones. Like, basically, it's going to be a jump ball for either one of those guys to take the reins in San Jose, because Jones was, listen, his numbers have been bad the last couple of years. Yeah. As that team has gotten worse in front of him, so too has his play. And so if they could go with a tandem like that, which I think would be decent, both guys push each other to reestablish themselves as legit number ones, that's a good scenario. It worked out. I'll bring it back home. It worked out here in Edmonton with Mikko Koskinen and Mike Smith, two guys that most people wrote off as probably one of the worst tandems in the league. Won't lie to you, I also felt that way, and they had a surprisingly good year. Now, they were both pretty bad in the postseason. That's over and done with, but it's interesting that Doug Wilson's going a little bit outside the box to find his netminder to fill a hole. And I wonder how many other GMs might have to go to their plan B or C, Joe, because there's only so many good goalies going around here.
Sure. Last name to throw into this goalie conversation here, news-wise, the Flyers did re-sign Brian Elliott to a one-year, $1.5 million deal as well. So it seems they'd be out of it with Elliott and, of course, Carter Hart as their number one.
Kind of hat.
The guy that I continuously will always mess up as long as Carter Hutton is a Buffalo Sabre. And I will always say Carter Hart by accident before I correct myself. Joe DiBiase and Tom Gazzola here on the Locked On NHL podcast. Let's switch to the defensive side of things, because there is a star free agent that I don't think a lot of us thought was going to hit the open market that is going to on Friday, and that is Alex Pietrangelo of the St. Louis Blues, and maybe he ends up back in St. Louis. We'll see. I think the latest report on what the offer was from the Blues was $7.5 million per, while Pietrangelo was looking north of $9 million per. And I personally think he's worth $9+ million. But again, we don't know what this current environment for a monster contract is like in a league where you might have so many with an internal salary cap. And then you've got Oliver Ekman-Larsson, where the winds continue to blow towards him being traded out of Arizona, and Boston and Vancouver seem to be the front runners at this point. I know that there was a report about the Edmonton Oilers are interested, but that they are on his no trade list. I think I have right on Ekman-Larsson.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll start with Ekman-Larsson, and then we'll loop around to Pietrangelo. I like the player. I think sometimes he gets a little bit overrated as a player because of his offensive stats, but I do think he's a very good defenseman. And I think that he is on a very good team, a number two, and on a team that needs it, he could definitely be your number one. But I don't know if I would be paying I don't know what to say here. I would trade a first-round pick. I would trade a star prospect. I would trade something that would help me on an NHL team. I just don't think I would give the Coyotes like two of those three things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the Coyotes are kind of playing from a position of weakness too, because with this new owner, they're changing up everything. They've gutted the franchise. Basically half the roster has been available. I know they just cut Michael Grabner loose. So Oliver Ekman-Larsson is a number one. Like, is he one of the high-end number one defensemen in this league? Probably not, but he's up there. He munches minutes, and like you said, great skill offensively. It's going to cost a bit to get him. And if you're willing to give away more than one, like, bona fide blue chip prospect and then maybe a first round pick, then you'll probably be in business with the Coyotes to get it. But his no trade clause, or his modified no trade and his team list, that he controls his destiny to a certain extent, which he can do at this point in his career at, 29 years of age.
Yep.
And like, I'll just say this from an Oilers standpoint. I know people around here were getting kind of excited. Some people around here did not like the prospect of Ekman-Larsson at all. And Ken Holland made a phone call, but it didn't really go further than that. And, you know, I think it got a little bit overblown. But if you're Ekman-Larsson, like, I think Boston is the right fit. What's going to happen? Torrey Krug's probably going to walk. Does Zdeno Chara come back? That's still a really good team. He could help rejuvenate that blue line, help Charlie McAvoy continue to develop. And I think that situation in Boston would be better for an Ekman-Larsson if he wants to win. But then Vancouver, the rumblings out of Vancouver, Joe, is that he's tight with Markstrom. And if Vancouver can get Markstrom, then maybe there's a way to also get Oliver Ekman-Larsson. But they've got cap issues and the money might not work. So it's intriguing. If you were to ask me where I think this is leaning toward, I would say probably the Boston Bruins. And but who knows? Maybe he ends up staying in Arizona, but time will tell. It's going to be crazy. That's just how I feel about it.
I think the Bruins do something. Even it might not be, maybe it's Pietrangelo actually.
Right.
And they've been rumored to be in that market as well. I personally, if I were them, would rather sign Pietrangelo than trade for Ekman-Larsson. Yes. I think Pietrangelo is a better player.
Yes.
And if I don't have to give up an asset, that's the better idea. But you have inherited risk if that's what you're going to go all in on, because that you don't have nearly as much control over if you're the Bruins. And by the way, it might be tougher for them to get Ekman-Larsson in that they don't have their first round pick this season. And I would imagine the Coyotes are really asking for a first round pick. So I guess you could give them their next year one. But if I think the Bruins do something, I would rather do Pietrangelo. I think Pietrangelo is the number one free agent even over Taylor Hall. And if I had to guess, that's what Boston does.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if you break it down by position, Taylor Hall's a left winger. And when you've got two bona fide number one defensemen in Pietrangelo and Ekman-Larsson available, albeit by different standards and different forms, they're going to be more enticing than a really good left winger. And that's no disrespect to Taylor Hall. He's an absolutely tremendous player, a couple years removed from a Hart Trophy, but number one defensemen do not grow on trees. There's only so many of them in the National Hockey League. They're like number one centermen. You get one, you hang on to them. Or if you have an opportunity to snag one, you do everything you can to do that and you make it work.
Yep. Yeah, that's where I'm at too. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, by the way, why have you? Is he going to re-sign in Edmonton?
My heart says yes. My mind also says yes. I think it's just a matter of making the money work, Joe. He's been making $6 million for the last 6-7 years. He signed a really good deal with the Oilers when he was really young. And I know he's happy here. I know he wants to win here. I've got to know him really well over the years. Mm-hmm. And if he's a 60 to 70 point guy or 70 points plus playing on the wing with Draisaitl or McDavid, which will probably happen, you know, he garners some big money, and that's he'll probably want or ask for 7.5, and the Oilers will probably say, we want to keep you closer to that 6. Look at Jordan Eberle. He took a haircut. He's at 5.5. And then I feel like they'll settle in around high 6s, maybe low 7. And there's probably some loyalty there on both sides. But I think at the end of the day, they get it done. But I know there's some rumors swirling that if they decide that they're too far away, that maybe they explore the option of trading him, which would be too bad because it would just blow a huge hole onto the left side / center position for the Edmonton Oilers forward unit.
The reason I ask is because it was interesting to me that they were in on, not interesting, because it wasn't surprising, that they were in on Ekman-Larsson, or at least that they were had interested enough to call. Because if they make a move for a defenseman like that, which I do think they should be in on, because they could definitely use that player. But I've always been interested in how Edmonton makes the cap work and how they kind of... do you want to avoid being Toronto? Because that's the way I was about to put it. Toronto's good, but every move they make now is it like a discount type move.
Yeah.
And if you're the Oilers and you land a great defenseman like that who's getting paid $8+ million, I wonder if they still try to pay Nugent-Hopkins. But they don't have that player right now, and Nugent-Hopkins is a phenomenal player, and he's still young, by the way, 27.
Yeah.
So he's always been someone I've been interested in, like what happens with him long term, because I think he's a second line center in this league, and Edmonton just doesn't need a second line center, but he's fine on the wing. Like, he's very good on the wing. But I've always wondered if they could. That's why he's always come up as like a Sabre trade idea. Is that, well, they need a defenseman more than they need a center, right? Problem is the Sabres don't have the defenseman that's worth right. that. But yeah, he's been very interesting to me.
And it's he'd be enticing. Absolutely, he'd be enticing to probably 30 teams in the league. And then here's the other thing. As again, Oilers fans, just like Sabres fans, they go crazy about any name that they hear or their own guys and what that guy could bring back in terms of a trade.
Well, not Jack Eichel.
Well, oh my God. Hey, by the way, I'm sure there's people in Buffalo having a heart attack when they're hearing all that Eichel news.
Okay. When Bob McKenzie, it was a whole TSN's Bob McKenzie, semi-retired, by the way, came out of retirement for that Jack Eichel tweet thread the other day.
Bobby
it was
Margarita.
A tweet, yeah. It was a tweet thread, but like the first tweet was, all right, I heard a Jack Eichel trade rumor. Let's dive in. That's paraphrased. But like, that's basically what the first tweet was. And my heart stopped because you have no idea what's going to come after that. But as you, of course, you go on and you basically, you get to the end of it, it's like, okay, he didn't ask for a trade. He doesn't want to be traded, and the Sabres don't want to trade him. So nothing to see here. We're good. We're good till next year at least. But the first tweet, I mean, Bob had my heart racing with, let's go in. I heard a Jack Eichel trade rumor. Let's dive in. Ooh. Oh, that was tough.
I can only imagine. Yeah, Bobby Margarita doesn't come out of semi-retirement in the offseason for nothing.
No, just Eichel trade rumors in the NHL draft, apparently, is it?
Yep.
All right. Well, we'll talk a little bit about what happens in the draft on Tuesday next week. We will talk lots of free agency, too, because we'll be talking after it opens, likely, or maybe we'll try to get one in right before. So come back next week for lots of free agency talk with me and Tom. Check out the rest of our episodes during the week on Locked On NHL, including with me and Mike DiStefano on Tuesdays. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at SneakyJoeWGR. You can check Tom out on Twitter at Tom Gazzola. This has been the Locked On NHL podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.